Excision number 11912, reel 3.
Mr. Eason, reel 3.
Now, this is a question I've asked myself time and time again, and I don't remember once feeling afraid. It was just as though this was an everyday sort of thing happening. There was no fear. There was nothing. But I had the feeling all the time this was Mother Nature's way of protecting us, if you like, with shock. Was you carried on with your duties? Automation. The gun was still firing the gun. We'd seen wreckage from the ship floating past us, but we're still firing. And when I got down off, I was firing it. I was delaying. I was firing the gun. And the butcher tapped me on the back and said, "Come on, Frank, it's time we were going." So I got down. I never spoke.
If I can just interrupt you there, because I don't think you finished the story of the Kashmir being hit by the bombs. You only described the first bomb.
That's
can you
right.
go back and describe the second bomb and then take the story from there?
Yes, I can. Well, after the first bomb hit, the forecastle just in front of the bridge, a second one came in from another aeroplane and struck, entered the upper deck alongside the funnel, and went down into the engine room and exploding, and then the boilers blew up at the same time. I don't know if that's clear enough.
Yes.
And the ship broke its back and separated into two pieces. I wasn't aware of this at the time, of course, until the butcher tapped me on the back and said it was time we was going. We was the only ones left on the gun. I wasn't aware of that. And the trainer, of course. And I stepped down from the gun. Can you
describe how you evacuated from the ship?
Well, I thought I was hurt, but I could walk. So I walked to the guardrail with the butcher. I climbed over the guardrail and just jumped into the water. And it was thick with oil. I was afraid of this oil catching fire, which it eventually did. But what caused that, I think, was one of our AA gunners had gone back to the ship again, swam to the ship, because some of the snookers was machine gunning the survivors in the water. And this was an Australian, a digger, went back aboard ship and opened up again onto the front part of the ship. He managed to get back aboard ship and opened up with a machine gun up by the bridge, which was leaning over by now, and shot one of the Stukas down. Everybody was there to see it. It just literally did, as cool as a light. And then dived off the ship back into the waters again. And of course the Germans went mad then, and machine gunning more survivors in the water. We lost quite a number of men like that. Quite needless, that was.
So they were deliberately killing people?
Oh, yes, yeah. Not all of them.
You mean it was just one or two Stukas that were doing it?
That's right, yes. I swam away from the ship and joined up with a number of our survivors around a Kali raft. And as I felt I was fitter than some of them, some of them were badly hurt. Our rangefinder had his face was torn off here and was hanging down here over his face, down the rest of his face, and he was holding it up like this. He was in the rangefinder and had his eyes in the face pieces. This is the way we thought anyway, and it turned out afterwards we weren't far wrong. When the bombs hit, the deck whips, as you can imagine, because there's another what happened to me. And that includes the mast, and he was up on the mast inside this cubicle, as you might say, with the rangefinder's gear. And that's the only way he can feel that it tore his face right down, hanging down over his face. His eyes were two red balls.
So it was the upper part of his face, which was torn?
Was hanging down, yes. And anyway, that before I finish the story, he did survive, and he's living in Canada now and still alive, yeah, because he joined one of our reunions. I know, we hung around, there wasn't much we could do. The little bit of, I think there was, they said, there was a lot of singing from the Kelly's crew, because they were quite close to us. In fact, in time we'd become mingled. The two ships were sunk very close. In actual fact, what Kelly was trying to do, come round, he was going hard over to come round and try and pick up some of us. But as he was coming hard round, a stick of bombs went up the side of the ship and he went straight over. I got a photograph of him upside down over there. You're still taping this, you're not?
Yes.
And that photograph is the only one in existence. Afraid, you spoke to me about, I've been afraid. Was I afraid? I think mostly because of the discipline. And the noise and the din, I don't think I had time to be afraid. Don't misunderstand me. I can fear the same as the next man, but on that occasion, and the next time it happened to me on another ship, I think myself, it is shock that, because I felt no pain. I was in the water all day. I had been hurt, but I didn't know. It's when the Kipling turned up. She should have been with us with the attack, but she had steering gear trouble and asked permission to lay off to make repairs, and that's what they done. And they came back just as night was beginning to settle in, and the Stuka started it on her then, but she beat them off and come along through the groups of survivors, and there was still bombing going on. She cleared off every time they turned up. She cleared away from the survivors in the water so the bombs wouldn't be hitting them. It did happen to them a couple of times, but you couldn't blame them for that. And anyway, she came around, and as she passed me, a couple of chaps on the through a heaving line, which is what we'd send the wires across to, as you didn't understand. And I didn't have time to tie a knot. I just wound it round my waist, wound it around, and hung on to it. And they dragged me up the side and dumped me on the deck, and then undone that took the rope off and was throwing it over for more. And I tried to stand up and I fell over.
How long had you been in the sea?
All day, from 8 o'clock in the morning till about 8 o'clock at night. And it was getting very, very cold. When we first went in, we thought, oh, this is lovely, the water's warm anyway. But for some reason or other, the temperature of the water at night time, it really got cold.
Did you manage to get to a Kali raft?
Yes, I was hanging on the side of it. But then, if there was a man that was sicker than you were, you put him on because you can float around. We had our life belts on. I was a strong swimmer. I could stay with the group. You mustn't split up. You're doomed if you wander off on your own. You must stay in a group. and they dumped me on the deck. I was covered in oil. Hands were burnt on the backs. Not that badly. But I think that it was more the effect of the oil after the it had got into the skin that made it worse, what it is. But I found I'd got a fractured leg and a broken ankle on the left-hand side. But I didn't know that, and I'd stood up and jumped off the ship. And I don't remember that. Well, I remember doing that, but I don't know why, how I'd done it. It's most of it is just like a dream, if you can understand. The reaction set in about 3 or 4 days later. We went ashore and got blinder. And then you relax, and then everything went haywire.
In what way haywire?
I don't know, in your mind, in your mates, where they've gone, what's happened to them. You don't really know. But the only thing that kept you doing your job was sheer discipline. Sheer discipline.
How were you treated on the Kipling?
Oh, they were bloody marvellous. They had two remains of two ships' companies on there. They struck the Kelly. She was laying on. And I get that photograph, and I'll show you. And there wasn't very much they could do. I'd lost all my clothes. I don't know what happened to those. And it might have been bomb blast, but I don't know. I don't even remember feeling a bomb. I never even felt any heat around me. And yet it was just the other side of the searchlight platform where the funnel was and the engine room and boiler room. Yeah, I never felt nothing. I was engrossed with what I was doing, it's true. And I saw the small skimming dish, that's a little motorboat that used to pop ashore with, and the coxswain of all people standing up in it. And it looked like a cartoon as he went past. I thought to myself, where's he off to? And I didn't think it funny at the time, but it seemed as though it was an everyday sort of thing. I don't know whether that's making sense or not, but this is how I saw it at the time. Well, she had an 8-foot hole ripped in her bows, Kipling did, but she, because Kelly was under the water, you see, but still hadn't gone down, and they rammed it. And so they picked up as many more as they could. Some were left behind because they were too widespread. And we didn't hang about because otherwise you'd still be within bomber range the next morning if you didn't get a move on, which is what happened to us, you see.
So this was an accidental collision between the...
That's right, yes, and it caught her. Oh, I don't know where it was on part of it. She was very badly damaged anyway. Kelly, when she went over, you see, so you had jagged steel sticking it everywhere. But just hitting it would damage her, because it's very fragile, as you know. You can lay in your hammock at night time in rough seas and see the sides breathing in and out like this. However, Kelly had to go back. She'd had some of her fuel tanks had been ruptured.
This is the Kipling?
The Kipling, rather, yes. And we didn't have enough fuel to get back to Alexandra, but we had enough to get out of bomber range. And signal for somebody to bring some fuel out for them, which they did. And I'm trying to think of the name now.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. There was a little supply ship came out at with barrels of oil, which they had a haul up on and then pumped down into the tanks. Huh. And so we were able to get underway again and watched him towards Alec. And the day before we got into Alec, we buried our dead.
How long did it take you to recover from your injuries?
I was in 64th General Hospital in Alexandria for about 8 weeks, 9 weeks. They weren't terribly bad fractures. They're straightforward breaks, fortunately. And about 8 weeks, I suppose, I was able to take the plaster off. The thing was, I'd had a... Do you know, it's the first time I'd seen it happen. The skin had been torn, and they never made any provision of repair in that. They just put some, or something like Vaseline and gauze on it, and then put the plaster on all the lot. And when they took it off, the smell was awful, putrefied. And yet when they washed that away, the flesh underneath was as good as new. Yes, I was amazed at that. First time I'd seen it happen.
I think that you said that the next time you were in action was on the Defender. What kind of a ship was that?
That's a destroyer. It's one of the old D-class destroyers. Very compact.
Where and when did you join her?
After I left 64th General Hospital, after they had a rest for a couple of weeks at Dhekelia Airfield, which was bombed every night for a rest, and joined the Defender in Alexandria. And our job was to keep the garrison at Tobruk, which is under siege from the German army under Rommel, supplied, and to take up ammunition, stores, and fresh troops to run them in after we all timed it to get there after dark, and also to leave during darkness. Taking with us other stores, things for repair, and wounded. And back to Alexandria. But on that particular day, things went wrong. Something held us up in the harbour during the night. And we didn't quite clear the area. We had a few Stukas over, but it's the Italian bombers, the high-level bombers. They didn't want to come too close, so they dropped their bombs further out. And they like a stone on the water, they ricocheted, and a couple of them bounced and dropped in under the ship. It didn't hit the ship, and exploded underneath, blowing our bottom out. The one of the Australian destroyers come alongside and picked up a tow, but whether there was jagged metal underneath or whether the rudder was jammed, this is only my own opinion, was that the she was made a very unstable for towing. So they abandoned that, took us all off, and sunk her. Just opened up a seacock, I suppose. They fired a few rounds into her, but she didn't last. She was going down anyway.
It says in the reference book that it was sunk by the Vendetta.
That's right. There was a Vendetta that picked us up. She's an Australian ship.
Now, jumping ahead in the war, I think you were next in action off the River Humber.
Yes, that's right. I joined the Sandown and the Port of London, and Sandown stored ammunition ship, and we sailed then for Immingham.
Can you describe the Sandown? Because you were telling me off record what it was like. Can you
say again? Yes, Sandown wasn't exactly a warship. No, she was a paddle steamer and an ex-ferry from Portsmouth to the Isle of Wight.
But she was HMS Sandown.
She was HMS Sandown. She commissioned it. She was armed with two small 12-pounders, one forward and one aft, that was all, and anti-aircraft guns, machine guns mostly. And what she was used for was to stop mine-laying aircraft in the estuary of the Humber. There was two or three other paddle steamers there, I can't remember them at the moment. Waverley was one, I believe, doing the same job. The Germans used to come over nightly and drop mines in free channels. One of the aircraft, which was bombed when we was out patrolling one night, shot down one of the bombers and it landed on her forecastle, crashed into her forecastle in bridge. So they left it there, they made sure it wasn't going to catch fire, and they turned round and came back up the harbour with the Heinkel stuck on the end of her bows with a tail up in the air.
Were you on it at the time?
Not on that one, it was us. It was the other ship.
The Waverley?
The Waverley. And came up into harbour with the aeroplane on. Well, after that, that went on for some time, and I was promoted to acting PO and left Sandown to go to Victory and Excellent for courses.
Jumping ahead again to June 1944, when you were on the Fort York, can you tell me what kind of a ship that was and what duties it had when you were on her?
Well, originally she was built, she weighed about 1,500 tonnes, and she was what we call a fleet sweeper. A very powerful ship, twin engine. And our job was to keep the channels free of German mines, which we did for some while. But after that, we was sent to Aberdeen and sailed to Aberdeen in Scotland, where we were completely stripped at the after end of minesweeping gear and fitted up as an ocean-going tug. We left there and proceeded down towards the where they were preparing for the second front, towing huge concrete harbour sections. First one was successful, second one was, but the third one wasn't, and we lost it. And as far as I know, it's still floating around out in the sea somewhere. No, it probably sank. Probably saying somebody must have done. I don't know what they do in those case like that, but it must weigh about, 10,000 tonnes of concrete? What they do when they place it into position, they sink them. However.
Was this for the famous Mulberry Harbour?
That's for the Mulberry Harbour, yes.
How was it that it came detached?
The lines parted in a storm. We couldn't get back on. It was too dangerous to get back on the block again. I don't know what they call them. Harbour piece. But with the hundreds that had come down there, there was very few of them lost.
So how long before D-Day would that have been, that you lost the concrete section?
June was the... D-Day was June the 6th, wasn't it?
That's 45.
Right. 44, sorry. Well, it was going on then. The 24th of June, 6th of June it started.
There's just something that I think you'd like to go back and correct.
Yeah.
Concerning the bombardment of Cherbourg.
Yes.
In November 1940, which I think was called Operation Medium.
Mm-hmm.
What was the correction?
I made a mistake with the name of Ramillies. In actual fact, it was the Revenge. Yeah, it was, No, that wasn't Ramillies, no.
You said it on the tip, you said it was the Ramillies.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was the Revenge.
That's right. Yeah.